This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Evening Edition. You're with Uma and Ezra. The start of 2014 has not exactly been a joyous occasion for Malaysians. Celebrations were marred by religious issues and disparities among races, and it's reached fever pitch with regards to a lot of, word exchanges and threats. The first week of the new year has left many of us tired and wary.
Yeah, enter the National Unity Consultative Council, the NUCC, set up late last 2013. The council is made up of people from various organizations who are to come together to discuss national unity and preserve national peace. But what does that mean, especially now when we're in the thick of, sensitive issues?
And so joining us to talk about the NUCC and the status of Malaysia's national unity are Datuk Saifuddin Abdullah, National Unity Consultative Council, NUCC member. Of course, he was the former Deputy Minister for Higher Education, as well as YB Charles Santiago, MP of Klang. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. So, to start off, this discussion, we've just entered 2014. From a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate the mood of Malaysians in light of, the spillover from 2013? There was a lot of things happening, that goodwill that we start off in every year.
So, can we just say 5 being incredibly happy,
yeah,
and 1 being miserable?
I think we are maybe between 2 and 3.
No more than 3?
Not more than 3. We left 2013, many of us feeling hurt. We entered 2014, some of us feeling more hurt.
YB Charles, would you concur?
This is definitely a very challenging year. And a measurement might not be a very fair assessment, though, because we do not know how high the pitch is going to be, though. But I suspect the pitch is going to be very, very high in the next coming weeks and months.
I guess that's what's concerning. I mean, we're 10 days into the new year. So would you say is the state of national unity in Malaysia in your own respective words?
Okay, this I must go back to Professor Shamsul Amri. He did a lot of research on unity and national integration. Now, he told us in the NUCC meeting that our unity status is not so bad. Otherwise, we would have crumbled after 50 years of independence. We have reached a certain level, which he termed as social cohesion. But the unity that everyone is dreaming of is still far away from being realized because of contradictions happening within the society. Race and religion being the two big factors influencing polarization. Politicizing of race and religion further fuel it and make it even worse. And there are various of other issues like class, like intergenerational, geographical or spatial, politics and governance included. So these are contradictions that are happening within the country that requires, I don't want to sound cliche here, but requires some kind of reconciliation.
Right. So, this is the question that I ask, everyone when I'm talking about this national unity, is that as citizens of Malaysia, we've lived together from pre-Merdeka, for hundreds of years now, right? We've lived together the many, many races. Aren't we stronger than that? So, for example, aren't we beyond the political rhetoric and the political posturing from either extreme side, whether it's Perkasa or someone else? I mean, don't we know better as a people?
Well, I think the people have spoken, at least in the GE13, in that context. Yeah, but what is needed now, I think people have to really speak up more. The voices of moderation must, for lack of a better way of saying it, drown the voices of the extremists. Yeah, say in race relations, in the context of religious tolerance. Yeah. I'll give you an example of the latest issue, the raid and confiscation of Bibles.
That's right.
by JAIS. In our first meeting on 6th of January, the NUCC made a very clear statement that we regretted that this happened. This is not the way to do things. We didn't say that JAIS was specifically wrong, but we say this is not the kind of approach that is required if you are serious about national unity.
Dr. Saifuddin, why the very, I guess, cautious approach with, you know, words? I mean, I know it's just semantics, but I think clearly there is confusion with regards to the legal aspect of it, about what's permissible and what is not, and of course the role of the NUCC about how it shows its hand in terms of this whole dialogue.
Well, the fact that we managed to come up with a statement on the first meeting was not so bad.
That is true. It didn't take more than 2 days. Yeah.
And some of us actually want to use the term like we condemn, you know. Mm. But anyway, what is, I think it is really a regret that it happened. Because then you portray Islam as harsh. You portray Islam as, you know, like you are anti something, then you become divisive. I think this has got something to do with the worldview, of the authority, in this context, religious authority. How do you look at people of other faith? Islam is by definition
peace.
A religion of peace. Mm. We don't believe in compulsion. Islam is a religion of rahmat, mercy, merciful, yeah. And the Prophet Muhammad always reminded us that you have to be wise in the way you enter into this kind of issues, yeah.
YB, what is the, I guess, sentiment on the ground in your constituency, for example? I mean, you were involved with, I guess, accompanying Father Lawrence Andrew to make his police statement. I mean, but what is the sentiment of the people on the ground? Are people worked up, or is there a sense of rationality that's prevailing?
Before answering that question, let me just go back to the original question that was posed, though, in terms of race relations, though. I think race relations does not exist in a vacuum, though. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's a function of laws, institutions, regulations, socialization, ideology, expectations, the state of democracy in a country, and so on and so forth. So all these factors determine the race relations at any one particular moment. So that's why we cannot compare this moment with another moment, say 1960s or 70s or 80s.
It's too simplistic to do so.
So every moment, these factors come into play, and it's got a certain shape and a certain manifestation to it. So in the context of what Dato had said in the raiding of raiding, or some would call it, Jais calls it investigation, but others will call it raiding, though. So even the language is also different.
Yeah, you say tomato, I say tomato. I mean,
in the way we look at it, why did that cause such anger, and in one side, and another group saying, well, it's justified on the other side, though. So I think this tells you the conundrum Malaysia is now facing, though. We are a society which is quite polarized, though. Which is quite polarized. At one point it was race, and now it is religion, though. Now, can I answer your question, or we take a break?
We're going to take a quick break, YB. We'll be back talking about national unity with Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah, as well as YB Charles Santiago. Stay tuned for more on BFM 89.9. And you're back on the evening edition. You're with Uma and Ezra, and we're speaking about national unity. Is it lost on Malaysians? We're with Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah, as well as YB Charles Santiago. Uma, earlier you were speaking to YB Charles, you know, before we were
about
going into
the
break.
About the sentiment on the ground, yes. Right? So we were talking about the raid, but I guess the sentiment on the ground is this: is there a sense of rationality among Malaysians? Is there a sense of brotherhood among Malaysians to know that, you know, posturing aside, rhetoric aside, we're beyond that? I mean, does that exist on the ground, or are you still getting anger and discontent?
Well, I think the perception on the ground is one of concern. And also in relation to where are we going to go as a country in the next so many years. And particularly in this country, we have a cost of living crisis already. Families are having difficulty meeting ends, and now looking for support from different sources and so on. And you have this problem emerging, though. So you have too many problems that society is facing, but there's no solution coming. And I think this is where the failure of government seems to be most apparent, though. Because governments are meant to lead, whether it's the federal government or whether the state governments, though. But leadership is not coming in order to resolve some of the issues that we just spoke about in the last 10 minutes.
I guess YB, I mean, that's probably the greatest concern, considering that we had the general elections just last year. And I think everybody sensed a reconciliatory period, or perhaps they were optimistic that there would be one. And considering the economic pressures that a lot of us have been facing, certainly in the last month, the last 2 months, with this particular incident that just happened with regards to the raid, there's a concern about that tipping point. And I think that's a lot on people's minds, about that there's so much silence, there's so much inaction taking place when it comes to, I guess, the leadership that we expect from our leaders.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that YB mentioned the word solution. I'm not sure if we still remember that there was this thing called the 10-point solution. It started with the Prime Minister writing to Bishop Ng Mong Hing, Chairman of the Christian Federation of Malaysia. This was back in April 2011,
right. And
there was acceptance on the how do we manage the production, the printing, the importation of Bibles in the Malay language or in the Indonesian language.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think the court, the judgments of the court, and the Jais raid runs contrary to the spirit of the solution. Why I bring this up? I thought we have been debating this issue for quite some time. As we go on debating, you can't stop people from speaking up. We also have to find ways and means. How do we, overcome the situation? How do we address it? Yeah. And yeah, like many Malaysian, me too, we were like waiting. Hey, when is the leadership of the country making statements? Yeah. And I suppose the Prime Minister made it, perhaps to some, very late, but still it was there. On the 6th of January, he did mention something about we need to diffuse this issue. And he mentioned two very important words. One is true dialogue and the rule of law. But of course, we have heard not much after that. And I think it is important that if we believe in dialogue, and I'm a believer that we should engage in dialogue, at the same time, the rule of law. But again, depending whether one law runs contrary to another laws. I mean, these are issues being debated now, especially in the context of the Jais raid.
Of course, yeah. And even the fact that the 10-point solution doesn't have the force of law as well. Right?
Exactly, which is also something that we need to. But again, I'm not a lawyer, but I believe there must be some way of doing it.
Yeah, but YB, I mean, when it comes to these things, this idea of negotiation, so on and so forth, I think don't both parties have to go in? I mean, if you're talking about the spirit of national unity, I mean, there is no winner takes all in this solution, in this problem. I mean, sure, the Allah issue was uncalled for. I mean, this argument over a word seems unwarranted, but it's out there,
sure,
in the ether, right, in the open, and so now compromise is the only way, I guess.
I think before we look at compromises, we have to look at what is the ground reality here. And the ground reality here is, at least in the case of Selangor, we have the 1988 Selangor enactment.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then we have the 2011 10-point solution. And then you have the Selangor Selangor Sultan's
Royal Decree.
Royal Decree.
Yeah.
So you have these three, and then you have the federal constitution. And
oh yeah, that small little thing.
Yeah.
That document.
And then nobody talks about and nobody listens to.
And to complicate it, I think the Menteri Besar made a statement 2 days ago about a new SOP and something
like that.
A new SOP for Jais to follow before they go on with their investigation.
So you have you have the federal constitution, you have the Selangor Sultan's decree, then you have the 10-point solution, and then you have the
enactment.
So you have four different instruments here, and four instruments contradict each other. So who is the implementing organization here? So there must be a solution at the level of the state, both state of the in the case of Selangor and the federal government. So the Selangor government must now speak to the federal government and vice versa to resolve this issue.
But I guess the issue is that because you have departments within that state government that ignore a lot of these, or ignore or follow to the T in some instances, depending on how you look at it.
I'm going to come to that. Now, Dato just mentioned the issue of the court case. The court case is a very specific one involving the Herald, the Catholic publication. So it really does not influence this overall discussion of the four different.
And I guess that's the confusion, right? Because it doesn't affect the Al-Kitab.
No.
It only affects the Herald.
Yeah. So in a press conference that took place after I, Dr. Xavier and myself followed or went together with
Father Andrew.
Father Lawrence Andrew to see the Selangor State Government. And following the press conference, it was unbelievable, though, simply unbelievable, because the question that was posed to the Selangor State Exco member in charge of religion was, do you support the Sultan's decree?
Oh my God.
Or no?
Wow.
And he was being shot at all the time. And, you know, it was very difficult to explain.
Yeah.
So, and he was trying to say, hey, look, we have a government and this is our policy. Question was very simple. Do you support the Sultan's decree, though? So it appears that there's some engineering going on here, though. Mm. There's some engineering going on to fly up this thing even more, as opposed to looking at, can we sit down and solve some of these issues?
Because anything you say is treason at that point, right?
Some people choose to overstretch the argument, because there are people who say that the Jaiz raid was legal because of the court
case. Because of the enactment and,
Because of the court case. When we know for a fact that they are not necessarily the same and they are not necessarily related, unless if you choose to overstretch it to legitimize whatever approach or worldview that you have looking at people of other faith, which I don't believe in. We shouldn't be doing that.
See, the sentiment of that raid is policing, though. Mm. Can one religion police another religion, though? This is the center of the debate. Mm. And then people are saying, hey, this is not acceptable, though. One group is saying it's within the law. Now, is it really within the law, though? But in general, as people, is it appropriate and for one religion to police another religion, though? I think this is some of the concerns that we have to figure out. But the point is, I thought that the National Unity Consultative Committee would come out with a stronger position, though.
Okay, well, I know. we'll get Datuk Saifuddin to reply to that. We're going to head to the news. We're speaking with Datuk Saifuddin Abdullah, NUCC member, the National Unity Consultative Council, as well as YB Charles Santiago, MP of Klang. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good evening. I'm Ezra Zayed.
And I am Umar Paga Nampike Paga.
And we're speaking about National Unity. Joining us is Datuk Saifuddin Abdullah, NUCC member, National Unity Consultative Council, as well as YB Charles Santiago, MP of Klang. And just before the news break, YB Charles was saying that, you know, perhaps the NUCC might have wanted to put a stronger statement to that. Any response to that, YB?
Well, some of us would like to make a stronger statement, but when you compare this current NUCC and the other committees like NUCC, I thought on the first day you made that kind of statement is quite, you know, is quite timely, and we have actually crossed the line. We are supposed to be an advisory council, but we take it upon ourselves that it is our responsibility to make up a stand and to try to, even if you cannot diffuse the situation, to put some sense into what is happening.
But when we're speaking about, you know, putting some sense into what's happening, I mean, you have the Secretary General of PACASA saying that the National Unity Consultative Council is a threat to national unity. I mean, it's the conversation and the political, perhaps religious and racial rhetoric, has come to a point where
it's ridiculous.
We're giving the microphone and the spotlight to all sorts of different players.
And PACASA also asked PACASA and others question the composition of the NUCC member. They say, oh, the majority are non-Muslim, and the Muslims there are all liberals, you know. so Mujahid, myself, Marina, we are now liberals, and I think soon we will be accused of more Christian than Christian, I suppose.
Yeah.
No, and you see, this is the point that I'm trying to say. We need to put some sense into the discourse. You can't stop people from speaking up, which includes PACASA, though we don't agree with them, or I don't agree with them. But the moderate voices needs to be heard. And I think we need, you know, more of the moderates to come out there and speak up. I've been trying in a small way to encourage civil society activists and leaders to please stand up and speak up, you know, and if you need to, like, you know what Marina did that Sunday morning
was fantastic.
Uh, I must admit, I may not be as bold and as brave as she is.
Yeah. Basically, she went out to the church on Sunday as a show of goodwill and giving out flowers.
I thought that was very noble. That was very, very symbolic. And we at NUCC actually applaud her for doing that.
Yeah.
We applaud her.
Well, you know, I think we should talk. We should try to take this time to talk solutions. We have two very clever gentlemen in the room with us. And I think, you know, we should tap your brains as to what needs to be done. I mean, not for the Allah problem. I mean, that's, I guess...
Because that's simple.
No, but that's symptomatic, right? Right. I mean, and it's almost the effect. The cause, of course, is this concern, is this quest for national unity and so on and so forth. So, YB, where do we even start? I mean...
I think we have to go back to what the Prime Minister spoke at the Christmas Day celebrations in Penang, where he essentially said that instead of choosing the path of confrontation or fighting with each other, let's seek common grounds. Let's seek common grounds where we can preserve peace, harmony, and stability of the country. I think that's a good parameter to start. But unfortunately, 10 days after that, this thing happened in where Jais raid took place. Now, he also said something that that had raised, and he talked about to exercise caution, especially on the part of government servants, exercise maturity in implementing government laws, and he made that speech during the Putrajaya talk that he was giving to government servants. Now, I think these are two things that we can learn from, where we have to look for common grounds. And there are so much similarities, so many similarities between all the different faiths in our country, which we can work on. But unfortunately, we only look at the differences that we have. I think the common people have so much in common. So many things that are common: peace, about, you know, justice, about environment, about gender issues. There's so many things that are so common to us. But unfortunately, now it is just being torn apart. It's being torn apart, and I think this is the danger that we have to curb, or we have to address. So, how do we go about looking at the common ground? And this is where institutions matter. Institutions now must come play a role in bringing together the various groups of people and in trying to push for some kind of discussion. Confrontation is not going to solve the problem. Going to courts is also not going to solve the problem. The person who loses will always complain. The group will always complain, and the issue is never solved. So it's only through discussion, talking to each other, will resolve these issues. So my suggestion actually to the NUCC at that time was, call for a cooling off period, a moratorium in all discussions publicly on the Allah question. Subsequently, privately address this issue with all the different groups towards a solution, a 6-month solution or 8-month solution, in order to solve this problem. But after I saw the statement that came out from NUCC, not so much the statement was not a bad statement, but the interview that was given by the chairman of NUCC subsequently to various media, that shocked me, though. Because it shows that they have not really given thought in terms of how to address some of these concerns.
Well, Charles, I guess looking at reconciling some common solutions, some common ground. I mean, when we talk about the federal opposition, Pakatan Rakyat, you have, for example, DAP lawmakers from your own party wanting to challenge some of the enactments, or at least looking at reviewing it. You have
Dato' Sri bold statement.
Very bold statement. You have Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim saying that, you know, that sort of move is not something that he's very much supportive of. I mean, already this issue is divisive enough. I mean, when it comes to how coalitions like Pakatan Rakyat resolve these kind of things and how they come up with a united front, is it problematic at this stage?
No, the view is that we need to have private discussions, not public discussions. And the view put forward by the three DAP Adoons is a private view. While we respect the view that they have put forward, but it's still a private view. The party and Pakatan Rakyat still has to sit down and figure out what are the dynamics of this question and work together with other parties to push for a solution, though.
Carry on.
But the point I'm trying to make is these discussions have to be conducted privately. It cannot be an open discussion where everybody gets into it and then there is flag burning, effigy burning, and so on and so forth.
Which has already happened, yeah.
This is something we have to avoid. So we have to find a middle ground, but a group that is accepted by both parties to do the brokering and coming to some agreement on this. And the best place would be the NUCC. Although it's a consultative council, but I think still there are enough people there who can actually pull it together to come with some solution in the way we go forward.
Right.
Yeah, of course, that is part of our goal, and that is part of the mandate. Okay, that's the real mandate of the NUCC. Well, considering that, again, that was the first meeting. But we have outlined certain areas that we have to look at, like policies and legislation, cross-cultural aspects, inclusive development is a big story. Yeah, national integration, but the more important part and the more difficult part is how do you translate this into real things? I think the NUCC, okay, I must say I am not trying to jump the gun. We have not discussed this, but a few of us are of the opinion that NUCC must come up with some concrete proposal that would really change things. I'll give you an example. Can we actually migrate? I'm very choosy about the word.
Yeah,
migrate from race-based policies to needs-based policies. If the NUCC can subscribe to that idea that this is one thing that we must do and try to strategize some low-lying fruits, small successes like, okay, let's put a stop to this column called race in the forms that are used by government to start with, yeah.
Or even in private. I mean, when I sign up for an internet connection,
yeah,
right?
Whatever. But there must be something that is visible, that people understand, okay, this is the way forward. Because if the NUCC, after 6 months and after lots of dialogues and town hall meeting, listening to voices from the grassroots, come up with nothing new, you know, the normal stereotypes, we urge the government to do this, we call for that, then we are not moving forward. We just have to come up with something concrete, something that can actually change the paradigm and allow certain things to move forward.
Right, but that's a cipher. I mean, I guess your task is made doubly hard by the economics of the day, if you will, because I think a lot of these troubles, a lot of the things we take offense to, would almost wash over us if there wasn't this kind of kindling, which is price hikes, which is not being able to line your pockets, your stomachs, and so on and so forth. Because I think that increases a tremendous amount of stress and pressure on an individual that somehow could lead to some kind of tipping point. So, I mean, when it comes to economic issues, when it comes to all of these price hikes, what does that mean for national unity? Because 2014 seems like it's going to be a very tough year for the common Malaysian.
You know, when I wrote a piece for one of my column, and that was a few days after, that was before, that was just to celebrate the coming of the 2014, I was saying we have one major problem in front of us, the rising cost of living. A few days after that, when I read another piece for another column, then I say we have more problem because now we have two rising issues. One is cost of living and one is polarization, or rather religious intolerance. Well, first of all, we could have avoided the Jaiz raid. That's as simple as that. Yeah, if it didn't happen, then probably we should be addressing one issue. Of course, there is the Herald issue, but just because we have to face this now, you know, it's becoming more complex. Yeah.
I guess on a final question about consultative councils. We have the Malaysian Consultative Council of Buddhism, Christianity, Hinduism, Sikhism, and Taoism. This is a mouthful of an acronym.
They are
MCCBH, yeah. BCHST.
I think they are part. they are also a member of NUCC.
Right, and so when we talk about, I guess, religious and interfaith dialogue, is that something that's always had a stop-start kind of feel to it, especially in Malaysia's history? There seems to always be a start to a lot of these councils, and then they stop because of some sort of protest. And is this something that now, given this particular issue, is the right platform for that discussion to take place?
You see, when we enter into a dialogue, we must understand the meaning of dialogue that dialogue is about free interchange of ideas, that you can accept differences. Yeah, the problem is when some of us enter into a dialogue, defining dialogue as bargain and compromise. Then you say, "Alama, I'm going to a dialogue. I'm going to lose something."
Yeah.
I think if we are, how do you say ikhlas in English? If we are
sincere.
Yeah. You go into a dialogue. Look, no one across the table is attending this dialogue to ridicule you or to cause harm. Yeah, to your religion or to your faith, but we are here trying to understand each other. I have a problem with this word tolerance.
Yeah.
Because
it means you're putting up with someone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we are putting up with someone.
You're not accepting, you're just putting up with them.
And I think we have to move beyond that. But again, I know this sounds like a cliche. I believe NUCC, at least for now, we have to come up with something more concrete. Something that is, I know the government will find it very difficult to accept, like, as I said, need-based policy. But we just have to tell the government, it's either you do it now or you're not going to do it ever.
YB Charles, we only have final thoughts on this particular issue.
And before you get into that as well, final thoughts, one more thing, YB Charles, the inner optimist in me has to ask, are you hopeful?
Well, we are a hopeful people, though.
Yeah.
But having said that, I think the first order of things is that the Prime Minister has to say something on this matter. The Prime Minister has been too quiet on this, and I would actually counsel a meeting between Prime Minister Najib Tun Razak and opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim to come out with a joint statement to cool things down on this Allah issue.
I would second it.
And also, I think that Tan Sri Khalid Ibrahim, the Menteri Besar of Selangor, has also the responsibility to meet up with the Prime Minister to resolve this issue of
the state conflict.
The conflict between the 10-point plan as well as state enactment. He cannot leave it to JAIS. JAIS is only an implementing body, and they have the mind of their own, though, which is sometimes, and most of the time, independent of the state. So therefore, both these people have to get together. I think that's to begin the process of reconciliation.
Well, it's been a vigorous discussion. Certainly, at least we have some solutions right here on the Evening Edition that everybody can take note of. YB, Charles Santiago, thank you very much. And Safin Abdullah, thank you very much for joining us on the topic of national unity. If you miss this broadcast, you can certainly download the podcast at bfm.my.
I feel like we should give them a round of applause something. Right?
Round of applause. Well done, folks. Well done. Stay tuned for more music right here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.